I have a problem. Most Unitarian Universalist ministers have this problem at one time or another. So here's the scene. I'm at a party or some social event or other, and I strike up a conversation with somebody I don't know yet. Inevitably, the conversation turns around to, well, what do you do? I try to pass it off with, well, I'm retired. And sometimes that works, but more often than not, oh, and what is it you retired from? And I know what's coming. Well, I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, and that almost always leads to the next question roundabout. Here it comes. Well, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? I don't know about them very much. Okay. So I haul out a handy-dandy little thumbnail of the elevator speech, if you will, and about half the time that's enough. And they say, oh, well, I got to meet somebody. But sometimes they think they're interested, and so it comes down to, well, what about the Bible? Or, well, do you accept Jesus? And I can see that 500-pound gorilla in the room, round in the corner. Here it comes. Wait for it. But you do believe in God, don't you? And I'm stuck. I'm stuck because there is no way to answer that question without a short course in theology. New friend has assumed they've asked a straightforward question, but they haven't. It's a very complicated question, masquerading as a simple question. And if you'll pardon the expression, God save us from such questions. You see, the word God is so ambiguous that it's become almost meaningless. I mean, which God are we talking about here? The God of the Old Testament? The God of the New Testament? Calvin's God? Martin Luther King's God? The Muslim God? The Hindu God? Or some Hindu God? Or something else we haven't even thought of? Well, a short course in theology is not appropriate for a Sunday morning, but a micro course might be in order. So let me outline my real answer to the question. And in true Unitarian Universalist fashion, I'll begin with what I don't believe. But don't worry, you don't get off that easy. I'll get around to what I really do believe in a moment. So to begin at the beginning, I do not believe in any kind of supreme being at all. Supreme being. Supreme? As I look over the things in the universe, the 10,000 things, as the Chinese would say, I just can't see any hierarchy there. They're just the things that exist, the stuff, you know. Sealing wax, cabbages, kings, neutrinos, Uncle Harry, Aunt Mary. And for the life of me, I can't see how any of these can be any more superior than any of the others. Unless, of course, we admit that we are simply projecting our human values onto the list. But then the hierarchy is not built into the furniture of the universe, but in us. And that's going to be different from person to person and culture to culture. So where's the inherent supremeness of any being? Nope. No supreme being. Therefore, I don't believe in a God that has human attributes. I don't believe in a God that wills, gets angry, watches over us, gets jealous, judges, loves, hates, gets bored, or anything else. These, I think, are all just projections of what we do, what we think, what we feel, onto something that we neither understand nor comprehend. See, the problem is we have to communicate in language. We've just got to use language. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I love language. Use it all the time. But language, like all human activities and inventions, has limitations. Language talks about things. Think about the problem of naming, or, if you will, nouning God. Nouns pick things out. A ball. A ball is a small, round, light object that you can pick up and play with. A ball is not a toothpick. So when someone says, Jane picked up the ball and tossed it to Dick, we know that she did not pick up a small piece of wood used to clean the teeth. But what would the word God pick out? It can't pick out anything because there is no thing that is God. But don't jump to a hasty conclusion here. I'm not an atheist. I'm not suggesting that God is nothing at all. Simply that God is not a thing, and so you can't name God. God is not a noun like ball. And that's why the Torah forbids us from naming, uttering the name of God. God has no name. To name God is to make a thing out of God, and that's idolatry. Trying to name God is both idolatry and futile. So, you're probably asking, what the heck kind of word is God? Well, the Buddha once said that both he and all of his teachings are nothing but a finger that points to the moon, and only a fool would confuse the finger with the moon it points to. The word God is a finger. But to what does it point? Ah, that's the real question that requires the short course in theology. That's why the use of the word without that course, or at least some shared understanding of what we're talking about, is bound to lead to confusion. So here is what I am talking about. It begins way back yonder in the early 60s, back east, when I was 16. For those of you who haven't been back east, this is somewhere south of Philadelphia. Well, in early adolescence, for several years, I started having some very peculiar experiences that were kind of difficult to explain. It was as if the boundaries, the edges between me and the world were softening. And it scared me. Like, I'm going to disappear here? So I resisted it for all I'm worth. But then one day, late afternoon when I was 16, there was a thunderstorm. Now, being a lover of thunderstorms, while everybody else was running to get in out of the rain, I was trying to make my way out into the rain. And by and by, the storm had mostly passed, but off into the east, there were dark storm clouds boiling around the way those clouds do. But to the west, the sky was bright with this rapidly rising cumulus clouds. They were bright white and reflected the setting sun's light down to where I was, bathing everything in this beautiful, amazing, golden light. And they were rising so fast that they actually prolonged the sunset. But then they reached the limit and couldn't rise any farther, and night fell like a hailstone. The birds quieted, but the crickets and the frogs and the katydids just replaced them seamlessly. And I walked out into this, and the edges started melting again. And this time, I stopped struggling and opened myself to it. I can't explain what happened next. William James calls such events ineffable, inherently undescribable. But everything around me opened. And I saw that everything is holy. And I felt something I had never felt before. I felt a peace, a serenity, an acceptance descend upon my soul, to borrow a phrase from Cummings, like snow everywhere descending. Remember what I read from Wordsworth. Even the motion of our human blood almost suspended, we are laid asleep in body and become a living soul, while with the eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. At the center of that serenity, the serenity that embraced and folded everything around me into a unity, I felt a presence. A presence embracing me. And I knew something that I had never understood before. I knew that no matter what happens to me, be it good, be it filled with pain, whatever, I am embraced by that presence. It will always, always be with me. To paraphrase Jung, bidden or unbidden, presence is always there. Wherever I go, whatever I do, whatever happens to me, through the dark night of the soul or the bright dawns of the soul, presence is with me. Wordsworth again. I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose light, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean and the living air and the blue sky and in the mind of man. A motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, and rolls through all things. Well, this was the first time I had such an experience. There have been others. In the 57 years since then, it's as fresh as if it happened last night. Some of the others have been less vivid, some equally. Once, even more vivid. I once had a dream. It consisted of a single sentence. Go thou peaceful in the world, for I am with thee. The assurance is there if we but look for it. So what is that presence that I experience? Well, in the sense of science, I have to say I don't know. Science studies and describes the world of things, the nameable world. Presence can't be named, but only pointed to. But there's another sense of knowing that's not of the nameable world. It is the biblical sense in which you shall know the truth and it shall set you free. This is knowledge as healing rather than knowledge as description. This is the sense in which Wordsworth saw into the life of things. This is the sense in which the devout Christian asserts, I know that my Redeemer liveth. This is the sense in which the Buddha knew release from suffering. And in this sense, I know presence. Well, time to return to new friend. She's anxious to get over to the cheese dip. You do believe in God, don't you? Well, I choose not to use the language of God because it's so fraught with confusion. I do believe in that which is not of this world, but without which there is no world. I do believe in that within which we are all infinite, because we are all enveloped in it. I do believe in presence, which is the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guardian of my heart, the guide and soul of all my moral being. Is that God? You decide. Having experienced presence, I find that question to be just irrelevant. You see, I found that we do not need to become holy. We are already holy. The task is not to become holy. The task is to live within the holiness that is already ours. This is my version of the old universalist doctrine. We do not need to be saved, the old universalist said. We are already saved. We need to make real in our lives the salvation that is already ours. And so to close, a poem of my own. We try to find a silent black cat in an empty, dark room. We blindfold ourselves. Maybe blindness will help us to see in the dark. We grope madly this way and that, and finally declare with conviction, there is no cat. Then we sit still and silent, and the black cat crawls into our lap and purrs.